Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're excited to welcome back to the show our music editor, Sharon Hyland, talking about the 55th Grammy Awards happening on February 10th. Sharon has a lot to say about this year's nominees and performers and who she thinks is going to come out on top. We then chat with psychologist and professor Dr. Frank Farley about Lance Armstrong's demeanor during the Oprah Winfrey interview and if purging himself was really the best idea for his future. We wrap things up with personal trainer Louis Caraggio about sticking with exercise after your New Year's resolution to stay fit starts to fade.
Capture your need for sound.
Very happy to welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show our music director, Sharon Hyland. Sharon Hyland, it has been a hot minute since you've been back on the program.
I love being here.
Were you on vacation?
How long is a hot minute anyways?
I believe several weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Then yes, it has been a hot minute.
So happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me on again.
I'm very happy to have you
Finally.
On.
Finally.
You're so busy to nail down and get scheduled for an interview.
That's life on the run, Kyle.
I understand that, as a convict that you are. Okay. So here's the deal. We are, you know, full on into 2013 right now, and we're also full on into awards season, whether that means television stuff or movie stuff or our favorite music stuff.
Indeed.
And as you are the music director, we have some serious business to discuss with regards to the 55th annual Grammy Awards.
Oh my gosh, the Grammys are coming?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
And I prepped her for this interview in case you were wondering.
And prop me up.
Exactly.
Thank
so
you.
The first question I want to start off with is the fact that, and you and I both love him very much, but do you find it rather intriguing that LL Cool J gets to host the event for like the 55th year running? I mean, I know he's part of CBS. CBS is, you know, hosting the show. He's obviously on a network show for the CBS network. So it all makes sense, if you will. But it's like, it's always him. Like if there is a pre-Grammy party, a post-Grammy party, someone's birthday, they get LL to host the show.
We'll do it.
He
does a very good job. Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing to think back on the beginning of LL's career to now. Mm-hmm. That it's good for him that he's gotten to where he's arrived at as the go-to guy for CBS.
Do you find him an engaging host of the Music Awards?
I think he's pretty good.
Okay. Would you
like to see them mix it up?
Okay. But so you would like to see someone like maybe a comedian or something like that host
I thought, that would be fine. Mm-hmm. I thought my eyes were going to pop out of my head if I had to spend another moment seeing LL Cool J with Taylor Swift.
That's a lot.
Bo Ring. I couldn't handle it. And I thought the only way I won't be able to see it is close my eyes, but then I would hear it.
Exactly. I really hope they don't get her to host anything full on.
No, it's like...
It's a lot.
I don't know.
It's that faux, oh my God.
Yeah, you can't be that surprised.
Every moment of
the
day.
All the time. Oh, look, something else.
Oh, Taylor Swift.
Oh, Taylor.
Just keep writing about Harry Styles. So the event happens February 10th in Los Angeles at the Staples Center. And they haven't announced all the performers, but they have announced some. So we'll go through them just quickly and you can tell me who you are looking forward to see on stage, if you will.
Wow, that was a whole other language.
You're welcome.
On stage.
Exactly. The Black Keys, Fun, Mumford & Sons, Rihanna, the aforementioned Taylor Swift, and Carrie Underwood.
Without sounding like a big meanie, Taylor Swift is a solid songwriter. She knows what she's doing. It's just her demeanor sometimes sort of makes me like, really, you don't get it? You weren't expecting it? You're not that surprised. Aside from that, people love her. Mm-hmm. She's a great performer. She writes good songs for the people that she's writing for. They all happen to be about ex-boyfriends. So heads up to the next one on the list for going out on a date with Taylor Swift. So it'll be a good performance, mm-hmm. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Having said that, the last time she performed at the Grammys, wasn't it last year? She was sad.
Was she sad?
So she wore beige and it wasn't exciting.
Is that the sad color, beige?
Well, there's nothing exciting about beige.
No, it's just there.
It's beige. So I'm sure she'll do great. Mm-hmm. Having said all that wishy-washiness, she'll be fine. Mumford and Sons.
Mumford, yep.
Oh, they've done the Grammys before, mm-hmm. and that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And they're so up here with the energy that'll be something to see, without a doubt.
And Fun?
Fun. Will they get to bring Auto-Tune with them? when they perform. And it's too bad that we got to hear so much auto-tune with them so far.
Wasn't that just Janelle Monáe?
Was it?
I don't know.
I don't think his voice actually goes like that. So you know what? Having said that, I think they're very talented, mm-hmm. so they don't need auto-tune.
Right.
But I'm sure they'll do fine, and that'll be fun to watch, too. That'll be fun to watch fun.
Black Keys.
Black Keys are great. They've got a no BS attitude. Mm-hmm. At least Pat Carney does. The drummer doesn't take anything from anybody kind of... doesn't take anything from anybody kind of guy. And both of them together, they do well live all the time. It'll be a fun proof that rock and roll is still alive. People are saying, rock and roll's back. I'm not so sure it ever really left, but if anybody's going to help prove that it's still here, it's going to be the Black Keys.
Now, I suppose this next name that I will bring up, it's either going to be either or, I feel, because it's either going to be Rihanna or Chris Brown. Last year, we got to see Chris Brown a plethora of times.
And that wasn't fair.
Not even a little bit. And now, as far as I know, Rihanna's only doing one song, but, you know, she's coming up on stage.
It's funny. You wonder. I think Rihanna would have been fine without the scandal. Mm-hmm. I think she would have succeeded to a level she was supposed to, and she's at superstardom level now. Mm-hmm. Chris Brown is still disgruntled about how the whole abusing his girlfriend thing has really worked against him.
Catch up, Chris Brown.
You really snap too. And yet, they're back together?
Well, this is what it feels like, considering they're in every Instagram picture going together.
And she's got a... it's none of your business attitude?
Yeah, can I just say, I like that song, but not the content of it. I like the whoever produced the song, but I don't like how she goes, none of your business. I'm like, say business.
She's busy. She doesn't have time to say business. That's a long word. Having said that, though, it isn't anybody's business.
Exactly.
It isn't at all.
Right.
But it really became our business when it's all in our face.
Well, because they keep talking about it.
Yes.
And they keep tweeting about it and sending out pictures. And then Chris Brown is doing videos like, I love two ladies. Do you really?
No, yeah. No ladies, Chris.
Catch up.
And that's not love.
Exactly. And the latest one as of this moment, Carrie Underwood has been announced as well.
And she'll be great.
Yes. She will be great. Is she the one that shaved her head recently? No, that was Kelly. Who was the one that shaved her head? Not Carrie Underwood.
You're scaring me.
A country artist just shaved her head to support her friend who was going through cancer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I thought it was Carrie Underwood. Maybe, no, I think it's Kelly Pickler. But all the same, they're all fun and we're on American Idol. So
there we go.
There we are. It all rounds it together. So I want to speak about nominees, Ms. Sharon Hyland.
Bring it.
We're not going to do all 67 categories or whatever there are.
What? I have a comment about every category.
We shall sit or focus on the, I don't want to say the main ones, because if you are in the polka album, I know it's important to you.
That's true.
It's just not our audience, so we're not going to focus on the polka people, but I appreciate your efforts.
Way to squeeze box it.
You're welcome. So let's start with, I think the one that has to be started with, Best New Artist.
Yes.
So there's a group on there that I had never even heard of before, but maybe that shows my not picking up on the country all
and
the time.
And I'm going to bet, mm-hmm. I wonder if it's going to be the one that I would pick to win.
Probably. The one that I think is going to win?
No, the one that you don't know.
Alabama Shakes.
I think they should win.
Tell us why.
Oh, the vocals on the lead singer, mm-hmm. like it's almost like they grab you by the throat.
Oh.
And they're just groovy, soulful. Totally think they should win.
All right. So that's your pick.
Yep.
Fancy for Best New Artist. Who do you think is going to win?
Them.
Okay. All right. Well, Esperanza Spalding won, so it's not like you can't go outside the box. You know what I mean?
Well, we look at the rest of the category and see Fun, Hunter Hayes, The Lumineers, and Frank Ocean.
Well, everyone has been going nutty, nutty, nutty for Frank Ocean as well as The Lumineers as of late.
It's so funny that you use the word nutty with Frank Ocean, because I just recently watched the video mm-hmm. for that song, Thinking About You.
Mm-hmm.
Cuckoo. I would have expected some, I don't know, people getting out of limos and going to the clubs and feeling the love. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting a shaman type guy with white eyeballs doing hand surgery. And by hand surgery, I mean using his hands to do the surgery with no instruments in a teepee. I wasn't expecting that from Frank Ocean. And yet, that's what I got.
He wants to keep you on your toes, Sharon Hyland.
These are images I will not be able to erase from my brain.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
so
Frank.
Let us go to Best Pop Solo Performance.
Best Pop Solo.
So we've got Adele, Kelly Clarkson, Carly Rae Jepsen, Katy Perry, and Rihanna. Who are we going with to win?
To win? Man.
I don't think Adele's going to get it. I think her year was last year.
I think so, too, and especially since the version that is nominated is a live one.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of good for her for hanging in there, but I don't think it's going to be her. I think my vote will go to Kelly Clarkson on
yes.
Stronger, because she's just one of those Survivor
Love
style
that girl.
People. People like her.
Mm-hmm.
And Carly Rae Jepsen, though, that song was a major.
But I think that's why she won't win.
That's
I think that's
so
why
catchy.
She won't. I know, but that's why she won't win, because all of these people that are voting, I feel, are very industry and like
elitist. But look at all the YouTube videos that were made.
Yeah, but look at how Justin Bieber didn't even get nominated.
And that's what proves that all is well in the world. He should not be nominated.
I understand your point. I would say that I wouldn't say he should have been nominated for Boyfriend, let's say, but As Long As You Love Me was a great track, and that could have been nominated for,
no.
Like, okay.
He got nominations at the American Music Awards, and that should make him happy.
I'm sure it doesn't.
This is an artist, remember, mm-hmm. who said, everybody uses auto-tune, that's just what happens.
Right.
No, Justin Bieber.
I thought you were going to call him Jack something. All right.
No, Jackson Hole. No, I just, you know what, it's fine that he's not nominated. Grammys mm-hmm. are another level.
They are.
And it's fine, Justin.
But see, that's why I question
Don't fight for him.
But I question your understanding then of Carly Rae Jepsen. Like, she was basically a pop phenomenon because of Justin Bieber for that song. He's the one that brought attention to it.
I don't think she should win. I just think it's an earworm kind of song that's damn catchy.
All right. Best rock performance. There's Alabama Shakes, The Black Keys, Coldplay, Mumford & Sons, and Bruce Springsteen. Who is going to win? I know it's something that you have to focus on a lot to figure this out. It's a major category.
It is a major category. Mm-hmm. Alabama Shakes, it would be great. If they won for them, it would be great. Black mm-hmm. Keys, I'd be happy with any one of them winning. Bruce Springsteen, that's a great song.
All right.
Wrecking Ball is a great album. Every mm-hmm. album that he's released, the last three have been super solid albums, so it would be fine if he won.
Okay.
And honestly, Coldplay, that Milo Xylito, mm-hmm. super positive album, super positive live concert experience.
All right.
Mumford & Sons has the energy that seems to be nonstop. And like I said, Alabama Shakes, I think if they won it, it would be really cool. It would be typically Grammy for them to win it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they will. I don't even know who I would vote for.
All right.
Eesh, that's a tough one. I'll say Black Keys.
Best rock album. Black Keys, Muse, Coldplay, Bruce Springsteen, Jack White.
Jack White's getting a lot of talk for that album. And he's just quirky enough
yes.
that he comes off as like, oh, maybe step outside and get some vitamin D. But he's so into just making sounds and making music. Mm-hmm. And he's into that
sort of...
He's
that cool hip thing that people
super cool.
are drawn to.
Exactly.
So do you think he's going to walk away with it?
It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Muse and The Second Law,
right.
start to finish, is an amazing album.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I say the same thing about Milo Xylito with Coldplay and Bruce Springsteen, the Black Keys, another tough category. I'd be happy with any one of them winning.
Let us move on to the rhythm and blues category.
Let's.
Now, there's a couple of these categories, but I want to bring up the one where they call it best traditional R&B performance, because mm-hmm. there are some heavyweights in here from like previous decades, if you will. Anita Baker.
Love her.
Beyonce's in there. Melanie Fiona, Gregory Porter, and SWV.
Mm.
That is just, I didn't even know they were like, you know, nominated. I knew they were running around sort of doing touring. I didn't know they'd actually had a song that made it as a Grammy nominee. So congratulations to them. They've been around since the 90s, and obviously Anita Baker as well. So how are you feeling in this category?
I'm going to say my guess will be that the Grammy will go to mm-hmm. Anita Baker.
Okay. I can see that and would be quite happy as well.
Yeah, she's just good.
Now, I want to bring this one up as well. We have to talk about the hip-hop, if you will, the best rap performance.
Mm-hmm.
So Drake's in there, Jay-Z and Kanye West, Nas with Daughters. And we also have Kanye West again in the same category, this time with some other rappers, Big Sean, Pusha T, 2 Chainz. And then Young Jeezy, again, Jay-Z and Andre 3000. So there's actually like double nominees for different songs in the same category. So it's a busy category, if you will.
Yes.
And a lot of people, you know, again, I guess won't have a lot of respect for maybe some of these songs, but, you know, they've done incredibly well and have key rappers that are in them, like people who've been around forever, you know, like a Kanye West or like a Jay-Z.
Hip hop is totally deserving of any respect they get, any and all, and
mm-hmm.
they're getting a lot.
Mm-hmm.
While it is a confusing category.
Mm-hmm.
Kanye seems to be that guy that sort of angers people.
Yes, he
so
does.
So I'm not going to vote for him.
Okay.
I'm just not going to do it.
All right.
Just because he's from close to where we live, I'm going to vote for Drake. And Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
Lil Wayne knows what he's doing. So
I think that's a good bet.
That's mine. And I think that Frank Ocean sounds like Drake.
Do you really? I could see that. I could see that. So now I want to head back to... Actually, we have to do this as well because we have lots of country fans that listen to our show as well. Mm-hmm. And I want to show some love. So let's talk about...
How about that?
That was... Sharon Hyland, everyone. Foley artist. Best country song. Carrie Underwood, Ronnie Dunn, Eli Young Band, Alan Jackson, Eric Church.
Did you say Henny Youngman?
No, I did not. That I did not. I did not mention that. But it's funny because I think if I read this correctly that Carrie Underwood is the only female in this group. Unless there is the band, there might be a female artist in the band.
Then there's the solid Alan Jackson.
Exactly.
I'm going to pick Carrie Underwood on that one.
Yeah. And she gets to perform. It might be a big
night. She'll already be backstage.
Exactly. She won't have to get up.
Exactly.
So now we have to talk about the, you know, I don't like to say this, but these are always like the awards that everyone talks about. Record of the year, song of the year, all that sort of stuff, album of the year. So let's start with song of the year. Ed Sheeran is up for the A-Team. Miguel is up for Adorn, which is a great song. Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe. Kelly Clarkson with Stronger and Fun. We Are Young featuring Janelle Monáe.
Well, I think song of the year. This is a kind of category. Song of the year, that's big.
That is big. That is, yeah.
You know, Stronger is a great song by Kelly Clarkson, not written by her.
Mm-hmm. Ed Sheeran is a great talent.
Yes, he is. No question.
So I could see this one maybe going to him.
I'm going to vote for him.
All right. I'll vote for him, too.
Okay.
So let us now talk about album of the year, I think. We'll go there first.
Okay.
So the Black Keys, Fun, Mumford & Sons, Frank Ocean, Jack White.
It's either going to be, in my opinion, Black Keys, El Camino, or Jack White, Blunderbuss. And I won't be surprised with either of those. The other three.
Mm-hmm.
Would I be surprised? I guess they're already nominated, so I shouldn't be surprised. But my picks are either the Black Keys or Jack White.
Do you think Frank Ocean, because he's, you know, nominated for a few of these, and again, everyone's been talking about Frank Ocean, and it's the Frank Ocean party year, basically. And you and I had sort of discussed this before, where is he getting the recognition because of the album, or is he getting the recognition because of him publicly coming out in a genre of music that doesn't technically embrace being gay?
It's a good question. And then couple that with the aforementioned creepy video that has unsettled probably more than just me. There's you know what? Like I said, if they're nominated, it's for a reason.
Right.
The Grammys will surprise us on some level, we hope, just so that we have something to talk about next time we talk.
Exactly.
It wouldn't surprise me if Mumford & Sons took it.
Okay.
The album is not getting the same kind of charge that the first one got.
Mm-hmm.
It is very good,
but
it's typical Grammy to pick a Mumford & Sons style.
Yes, because exactly. But. So now I want to round off with, you know, everyone always talks about Album of the Year, which is what we've just discussed, but Record of the Year, also a big one to have as a feather in your cap. So,
well, sure, and interesting to note, there's 6 nominees in that category.
Yes.
Why? Why does everything else have less than 6?
They forgot to count.
That one.
I don't know.
It's weird.
We should include that too.
Probably Taylor Swift. She paid someone off.
Well,
she's in there. We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. Frank Ocean, Thinking About You. Gautier, Somebody That I Used to Know. Fun, Janelle Monáe, We Are Young. Kelly Clarkson, Stronger. And the Black Keys, Lonely Boy. And I want to ask you before you start, I want to know on this one, who do you think should win and who is going to win? Unless they end up being the same thing.
Taylor Swift shouldn't win.
Should not. Let's clarify that.
I don't think she should win.
No.
Good song and everything.
But it's more of like a fun sort of,
exactly,
hey.
And there's talking. We're never getting back together. Great. So you're never going to get the Grammy. No.
Yeah.
You know what? She might. And maybe that's going to be the moment.
Yes. And then Kanye West is going to come up on
Kanye
stage.
West is going to tackle her.
And then Kim Kardashian is going to come and pile driver.
And then tell, what are you tackling her? We are never getting back together. It's going to be full circle.
Yeah.
I think Record of the Year, I think will go to Black Keys. And I think they should win.
You think so?
Yep.
All right.
Gautier is one of those songs that has staying power.
Yes.
And that simple groove, catchy. Yep.
He wrote it in a barn.
Perfect.
That's one of those hip coolster.
It's because you're from the farm that you know that.
I do know that. And I interviewed him. So
and that.
And I know that.
So I'm going to pick Black Keys on that one because they're sort of, they're not glitzy stars, mm-hmm. They're not, what is he wearing? They're cool guys. Yeah. They write cool music. They write it for themselves. They know what they like. They know what their influences are. They're nominated elsewhere mm-hmm. in the Grammys for their production skills. So I think it's going to be the one that's going to take it.
Will
and I
be,
think it should.
Will you be mad if I tell you I think it's going to be fun and Janelle Monáe, We Are Young?
I'm not going to be mad at you. I'm just going to look away.
Okay. That is why we love Sharon Hyland. And Sharon Hyland, I know we're going to have you back on the show relatively soon because we haven't had a 2013 music capsule from you yet. So
we'll get to that. I want to mention if you're unfamiliar with all the nominees, mm-hmm. if you go to Grammy.com,
okay.
First of all, you will not see a picture of your grandmother. You'll get information on the show, but there's a little bar at the top that says, "Do you think you're a Grammy nominee?"
Wow, really?
And I thought, I think I might be. Then I realized I wasn't.
Okay.
Because you can check the first letter of your first name, click and see all the ones that match up to that.
I see. And Sharon Hyland wasn't on the list?
She wasn't.
Damn it.
I know. So that's why I'm not going to go to the show this year.
I see.
Because I wasn't nominated.
So you and Kanye both not going.
Perfect.
Awesome. Very nice. You're watching from home with popcorn.
Not Kanye.
Okay. Sharon Hyland, thank you so much for joining us on the show this week.
Thank you.
That is our music director, Sharon Hyland. You can learn more about her on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com, and you can also follow her on Twitter at the Sharon Hyland.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
It has been an ongoing saga for several years, but it ramped up to a fever pitch in the last few weeks with Lance Armstrong finally doing a complete 180 and admitting his guilt in taking banned substances during his very successful racing career. To set the record straight on his part, Lance chose to sit down for an apparent tell-all with Oprah Winfrey, but after watching the much-anticipated chat, it seemed to fall flat. Joining us to discuss Lance and his behavior in all of this is Dr. Frank Farley, a former president of the American Psychological Association, a psychologist and professor at Temple University in Philadelphia. Dr. Farley, thank you so much for joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show.
You're welcome, Kelly.
So, Dr. Farley, let's take a step back, from all of the recent hoopla, I guess, and examine Lance during his time in racing and from when he started denying the doping allegations. Were there signs back then that, he was in fact lying? Because he definitely, put on a good show. I was one of those believers that thought he was telling the truth.
Well, all the hoopla you hear about recognizing a liar from their appearance or their language is very overdone. It's very hard to recognize a liar scientifically. So you would really have to observe him closely over a long period of time. And of course, I didn't do that, nor did most people. So, when he said he didn't do it, I believed him. I trust that he didn't do it. So it's very hard to say when, I've heard people say that, well, they knew it right away. They could tell by his eyes or the way he said things. And that's typically nonsense. So we don't know for sure what the signs are. But anyway, I didn't see anything untoward. I haven't followed his career that closely. Bike racing is a fairly arcane sort of specialized sport, and it's not one that I get very close to.
Okay. Now, part of the reason, for example, that I myself trusted what he was saying, I think, was because, of all that he'd actually gone through with his battle with cancer. And I guess somewhere in myself, I thought that because he almost lost his own life, there would be no way that he would, take chances with injecting himself with potentially harmful, medication and other, foreign substances. So do you think there were others like me that thought this way and basically gave him a free pass because of his battle with cancer?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. And you would assume that somebody who went through all of that horror would be a straight shooter. And absolutely. I think most people believed him. And they saw him as a kind of heroic figure who had done good things through Livestrong, his charity. And he did do good things. And it's probably the one thing that will save him is the good works that he did, when balanced against the bad things he did. So, yeah, I think most people pretty much accepted him along the way.
Where do you think the shift started between him being, this strong cancer survivor to turning into a bully who had a must-win attitude at all costs?
Well, it's my understanding from everything I've read, including the Oprah interview, which is that he's been a very forceful guy for a long time. I don't think it was some overnight transformation, and that he's had these very forceful, autocratic habits, aggressive habits for a long time. And so I don't think there was a sudden transformation. I think it's just becoming clearer on the basis of that interview. And of course, he was, you know, he almost seemed in parts robotic in that interview, very controlled, not much emotion at all. He showed a little bit of emotion talking about his kids. That was about it in a 2.5-hour interview. So he's a very controlled guy, and I think it's just coming out more clearly.
In that interview with Oprah, he kind of alluded to how the situation, you know, got out of hand because he was, you know, personified, he says, you know, kind of as a survivor and a person to look up to, and that, you know, he had no choice but to try and live up to the expectations, and that's where he lost himself. Do you buy his argument that basically he's as much a victim of his own hype as we are to paying attention to it?
No, I don't think so at all. He's smart. He's obviously a pretty intelligent guy, and no, I don't buy that. I mean, he's got a personality that's probably pretty deeply wired and probably showed up way, way back, you know, and much, much earlier in his life. And he's an alpha male, very, very dominant. At least this is my opinion, of course. You know, I've never met him or interviewed him, but it's just my opinion from the outside looking in. And from what I see in the media, I think that he hasn't changed a whole lot. And I would be shocked if we get massive change in him going forward. I just don't see it happening. That's my prediction.
Do you think that part of the contributing factors to this whole charade is the people that he surrounded himself with, you know, these yes men and women that helped to fuel the deception? Because in my mind, he kind of reminds me a little bit of how Michael Jackson kept this tight inner circle that sort of kept him out of touch with reality in a way.
There could be some of that. On the other hand, he was surrounded to a large extent by very outstanding athletes, you know, people who made it into the Tour de France, for Christ's sake. So I think that he, you know, he had around him some fairly strong people. He was just the strongest.
Joining us on the program is Dr. Frank Farley, former president of the American Psychological Association, a psychologist and professor at Temple University in Philadelphia. If we take a look at the interview with Oprah, first of all, why do you think he chose to do it? And what do you think, and what do you take away, I guess, from his performance in the interview? I know you alluded to it a little bit before that he didn't have any emotion.
Well, I think that he was very straightforward, very clear. He wasn't pulling any punches that I could see. He said, I did it. I'm sorry I did it. I will not do it again. He said yes to banned substances, yes to EPO, yes to blood doping and transfusions, yes to testosterone, yes to cortisone, yes to human growth hormone. I mean, he was pretty straightforward in laying it all out. Beyond that, though, on the personal side, it was very hard to resonate with him. There's two broad categories of empathy. One is what we call cognitive empathy, where we feel for another person, but basically what it amounts to is we understand their pain or their distress. That's one form of empathy. The other form we call emotional empathy, and that's where you actually feel something for that person. You know, you could almost cry over their distress. I didn't see any emotional empathy that we could give him for that performance. Maybe some people might be able to give him a little bit of cognitive empathy, saying, you know, well, he got himself into this and it just escalated and snowballed and got worse and worse, and he couldn't get out of it, and so he just decided to keep on rolling with what he'd been doing, the whole doping schedule. So it was a performance that was, I thought, pretty mechanistic. He was, I thought, pretty much in control of himself. He laid it out, but he really didn't, you know, tug at our heartstrings in any clear way that I saw.
Yeah, I kind of felt, like I said, I was a big supporter of his in the past, and when I watched the interview, I actually didn't even watch all of it because I felt sort of really disconnected from him when he was, you know, saying his piece, even when he said, I did it and I take responsibility. Like, I almost felt like I was listening to a brick wall.
And I almost felt like he was a bit contrite.
I think there's a lot to that. And I think your sensitivities are those of most people. I think most people felt that way, too. I honestly, if he'd asked me and wanted advice from me, I would have said, don't do the interview. I don't think it did him anything. You know, it's... And look, he was in the presence of Oprah, who, you know, gets people to cry and weep and emote all the time. Mm-hmm. And even she couldn't pull it out of him. So
what did you take,
this is a super controlled man.
What did you take away from her side of things, like looking at her reactions and how she dealt with him for those 2 hours?
I thought she was okay. I didn't think it was anything spectacular. I think other people could have done it also. But, you know, she didn't get involved emotionally that I could see. And she just rolled on with the questions that needed to be asked. And I thought the questions she asked were very good. So I would have to, you know, give her an A for the interview. She didn't pull the emotion out of him. And I thought she might try, but she decided, I guess, to not go that way.
Because I don't think he would have given it, right, Dr. Farley? Like, he just seems like he was, I don't know, like it was like literally looking at a stone wall.
Yes, I think that's right. And you could say that she, in a sense, had met her match in the give and take, because you're right, he did not show any likelihood of letting it hang out, and he was amazingly controlled, given the things that he has done, and the fact that this would be watched by, you know, millions and millions of people, and people who had put him on a pedestal had viewed him as a hero, and kids and bikes, and who thought he was just superhuman, and now it's just all, you know, all falling apart. So he wanted to control the destruction, and I think that's basically what he was doing.
And I guess another problem that I personally had with him, and I'm assuming other people would have picked up on this as well, the fact is like you said, he was super controlled, and that's one thing. But I feel like, because again, you don't need to cry or carry on. I don't want that if that's not really who you are. But I guess the problem that I had with it as well is like, I felt that he was very controlled, but I really didn't feel like he was really that sorry.
Oh, I didn't see much of that either, honestly. Look, President Obama showed more emotion over the Newtown shooting, you know, than Lance Armstrong showed over the total destruction of his career and the revelation of the terrible things that he did. He didn't show much of anything on it. It was a very straightforward piece of work, and that was about all there was to it.
I wanted to ask you as well, you know, in the past there's been lots of people that have gone through whatever and then sort of want for forgiveness or, you know, to get their career back on some sort of level. You know, Bill Clinton has been forgiven, and now he's almost like the rock star of the Democratic Party again. You know, Michael Vick, he's been forgiven and back on the football field. Is Lance Armstrong going to be forgiven?
It'll be harder than the previous, than the ones you mentioned, for sure. I think it's possibly because it had more extent. More people were involved. The charity was extensive, and people, you know, donated lots of money to this charity. And so there's more extent. I think he's more toward Bernie Madoff than he is toward Michael Vick. And so what he did, the lies and how consistent they were, et cetera, and how he despoiled the premier bike race in the world. You know, I'm sure that he can't put a foot in France these days. So, in a sense, he took down a major sport, and it'll take him a long time to get back. And all the lawsuits, you know, sort of nastiness over his own lies. And so the endless lawsuits and the bullying and the dumping on subordinates. Clinton and Vick didn't even come close to that kind of behavior. I mean, what they did was basically, they didn't trample on other people, and it looks like he did.
As a person, you know, for his own betterment and well-being, what do you think Lance Armstrong should be doing mentally and emotionally right now? Because, again, like, my take from it is that, A, he's really not that sorry, and B, I still feel like he feels entitled.
Yeah, well, I don't know how he can rehabilitate himself. I think the ledger of his life. On one side, it's very destructive and very negative. On the other side, it's positive, which is his charitable works. But those have a hollow ring to them because of, you know, he got them on false premises. He got all that charity going on false premises, in a sense. He was living a lie. I think the way for him to rehabilitate himself, if he goes that way, is on the positive side to get back into charitable work somehow. And in a sense, do what he can to exit sport gracefully, pay back the money that he got in lawsuits that were based on a lie, and then move on from that sport and just devote himself to charitable works. I think that he might rehabilitate himself somewhat that way.
Do you think that it's hard for him to sort of get through the days in a way, in the fact that he's just looking back in the last 10 years or so, or even longer, actually, based on like usually, like a big lie?
I would expect, again, I don't know him, and everything I'm saying is, you know, sort of speculation, but I would suspect it's in the wee small hours, this is pretty rough. It would be rough, I think, on anybody. And his family and his children, and the fact that he bestrode the world like a colossus, and now he's just an untouchable. And so, you know, nobody wants anything to do with this, with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he lived one of the, just a huge lie, repeated and repeated and repeated in front of the whole world. And not many people are, you know, have that experience. So he's going to have some hard times.
Yeah, I really feel like he's in a class by himself, because even if we look at Tiger Woods, you know, and that was like a huge athlete that, you know, worldwide, he's super popular and the whole thing. But I think that the fact that Lance went through this battle with cancer and people felt so affected by him and you know, believed in him so much because he got through it and they wanted to get through it, or they knew someone that had to get through it. Like, it was just such a pillar to believe in. I almost feel like his position is way worse than anything Tiger's, you know, has gone through.
Oh, way worse, way worse. The thing about Tiger is it didn't impact anybody but his immediate family, basically. You know, we looked at it and said, oh, bad boy, bad boy. But, you know, it was just more titillating than anything else. Lance lived a public lie involving an international sport with many nations involved and many people dedicating their lives to it, and on, and his charity and so on. So he undermined all of those things. Tiger Woods, really, his main rehab was personal, in his personal life. And he's had trouble with that. I mean, he's off his game, you know. These things can eat away at you. You know, Lance Armstrong is finished in terms of cycling. I mean, there's no way that he's going to be able to, I think, recoup anything there and get back on a bicycle. And plus, age is working against him. But his lie and lies had extent. You know, they spread out in so many different ways, and Tiger was much more contained.
Dr. Farley, thank you so much for your insight in this. I really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome, Kelly. Anytime.
That's Dr. Frank Farley, former president of the American Psychological Association, a psychologist and professor at Temple University in Philadelphia.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
With so many people wanting to turn over a new leaf and get fit as the new year takes hold, the gym can quickly become an unpleasant and packed place to be. Personal trainer Louis Caraggio joins us to talk about things you can do to keep going back to the gym and keep you inspired to work out. Louis, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Happy to be back, Kelly.
So what is it that makes people gravitate towards going to the gym, you know, in January and February? Because everyone sort of puts that big push on at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a time for people to enjoy December and November with friends and family and really indulge in things that they really enjoy doing, and to have a break of just really focusing on being healthy for a few months. So they're just out there really enjoying themselves. And then January comes and it's a time for people to, you know, focus on resolutions and being a better person and taking care of themselves more. So I think that's the craze. It's sort of a new year and a new beginning for people.
What do you see, you know, being a personal trainer when it comes to beginners, you know, that they maybe shouldn't be doing when they start that journey to the gym?
You know, some people just go at it too hard, too fast. They maybe have bad form, bad technique. They may be swinging the weights around. And I think that ultimately just comes down to people really not being present in the gym. Their mind is maybe somewhere else. They're just not focusing on their body, on their alignment, on their muscles contracting. So that would be the primary thing, I think, just not being focused on what they're doing.
And what do you say, I guess, to, you know, a beginner when it comes to getting in the groove? I'm assuming that the word routine is probably important, like just getting into the routine.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, find something that you enjoy doing and get excited about it. Make a resolution and go to the gym and really believe in yourself that you can do this and you could accomplish it. But know that you have to be in it 100%. Like, you can't kind of just show up to the exercise class, or you can't just show up and walk on the treadmill. I mean, that's good if you're going to walk on the treadmill, but you have to put some exertion into it. Interval training is some of the best things that you can do when you're at the gym and you're doing your cardio, be mindful of your exertion. If you're not really breaking a sweat and you're not focusing on your alignment and your breathing, and you're not, I mean, there should be some type of a love-hate relationship. You know, you should, if you're doing something that is good for your body, it should almost feel good. You should be acknowledging the fact that, God, this feels good, and I have good form, and this feels good. And so then it becomes a routine. And you go back and you do it maybe 3-4 times a week. When it's not enjoyable, then it's hard to incorporate something as a routine because it just falls off.
It falls off
your to-do list.
I want you to speak of, you know, people and when they go to the gym, like you said, because you briefly mentioned the word, like, you know, making sure that you're exerting yourself. Because I can tell you a pet peeve of mine is when I go to the gym. Like, I go to the gym, I know I'm a little psychotic. Like, I, you know, when I go there, like, I'm all business. Like, you know, I enjoy it, but I want to make sure I'm there and I'm putting in quality time and doing what I need to do and sort of being as intense as, I need to be. But what ticks me off as an observer of other people, especially maybe other people who might need to actually work a little harder, is when they're like reading a magazine or on their phone on the treadmill or, you know, on the elliptical. And I'm like, how are you even doing anything?
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. That's exactly why I created something to help people do real meaningful workouts at the gym. And what I call this is Cardio Mission. I trademarked the name. And I have all these new mission workouts coming out. And ultimately is create a mission for yourself when you get on that treadmill. What's your mission? Is it 30 minutes of X amount of intervals? But there needs to be some type of mission. So you're focused on the cardio and it doesn't become just like this methodical walking and maybe reading a magazine or watching the TV or talking to your friend next to you. This time is so precious for you to improve your body and to attain your goals. And those goals are so important for you. They're the juice of life. They're the zest of life. You know, they're the reason you look forward to a new year because there's all these new goals for you to attain. And the only way you're going to attain those goals is if you have a mission and a plan. So, yeah, I mean, throw away the magazine, read it on the subway, read it on the bus, read it in the waiting room of a doctor's office. Don't do it on the treadmill. Don't talk to your friends on the treadmill. You know, this is time for you to work out.
Now, speaking of, you know, talking to your friends on the treadmill, what is your position, Lewis, when it comes to, you know, some people are, you know, have said to me, because, and again, I'm just using myself as an example, I can't work out with other people. Nor do I want to. The only other person I can work out with is if I go for a run with my sister. Otherwise, I don't want to know about you. But I know that some people are like, oh my God, like I can't go to the gym unless my buddy's with me. What is your position on going to the gym buddy style?
I think if they're there to push you and motivate you, I'm all for that. you know, we're predispositioned for running in our DNA to running groups. You know, they say years and years ago in caveman time, we all ran together. So that's something that's like ingrained in our DNA to like run together and be in a group. So I think it's great if you're going to go to the gym and you're going to have a workout partner, someone that can hold you accountable to your goals and your workouts. But if it's someone that becomes more of a social partner, someone to chit-chat with and pass the time and it's not focused, if you walk out of the gym and you think, God, I learned some juicy gossip about this one and I solved this problem, if you're not walking out of the gym saying, God, that was a great workout that I had with my workout partner, then they're probably not the right workout partner for you.
Fantastic. Okay, I think that's important to figure out, like, yes, are they pushing you or are you getting juicy gossip and not really working out? Now, I wanted to ask you about this as well. How important is it for a beginner to have, like, you know, a good state of mind when starting off on their journey of being fit and healthy?
I think it's essential. I think in the beginning, I think you should really be feeling your body and just exploring it, seeing how it feels, not pushing yourself too hard on the weights or on the cardio equipment. You know, give yourself a week to feel your body, to feel, you know, how your foot's hitting the floor, how your muscles are reacting to the energy that you're putting out, how your breath is feeling, your oxygen consumption, how your mind is feeling. So give yourself like a good week to just like adjust to getting physically active again. And then from that point, you know, do what feels right. Again, do what's like enjoyable for you. I mean, most people say, God, I hate exercising, but there'll be a point where hopefully you'll start to like certain things.
Okay.
And that's what you want to explore. It might be a Zumba class. It might be, you know, an instructor at an abs class that you really take a liking to. It could be a number of different things that just get you in that mindset of this is fun, it's challenging, and I'm seeing results, and I feel good.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is personal trainer Louis Caraggio of Body Architect. Make sure to check out his website, www.bodyarch.com. Louis, why do you think that so many people end up, you know, leaving the gym sort of at the end of January, you know, maybe mid-February? Some people stick it out sort of 6 weeks or so. But it just seems like, that, you know, they're called the January joiners. And then I notice as someone who goes to the gym, you know, year round, that they start to taper off. And it feels like it's sad that they've started and then they quit so easily.
Yeah, it is sad. I think it's because they gave up on their dream or they just lose hope. So I think it's important to kind of explore the reasons why you're doing this and take a look back and look at like the previous year and maybe look at what stopped you from accomplishing your goals or achieving your goals the previous year. So you can know what to do when those voices in your head start telling you, you know, stop going to the gym or just stay home, just watch TV, whatever it is, you need to change the old habits that you had.
Would you say that a large reason or a big reason why people sort of fall off is that it's more mental than physical? Because it's funny, like, if you ever watch these, you know, shows or exercise shows or whatever, where they're trying to inspire people to get healthy, like, you know, some of them are severely overweight, but it feels like they actually could probably, you know, handle it physically. It's more like they're talking themselves out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very much mental.
Okay.
Very much mental. You have to stay in a positive mindset. You have to get your sleep. Get your 8 hours of sleep the night before, because if you wake up feeling tired, chances are you're just going to go home after work and you're not going to go to the gym. It's the food that you put in your body. You know, people, that affects your emotional state. You have to be eating like really healthy food. And that's like 80% of keeping the weight off and losing the weight during this holiday craze of losing weight. It's what you're eating. So that plays a huge part in it, and how people are thinking. Are they thinking clearly? Are they thinking rationally? Are they getting depressed because they're not, like, they're eating all these processed foods and they're not hydrated? So yeah, it's definitely mental, and consume good, healthy food, take care of your body, get a good night's rest. And sometimes when you hear those voices, you know, oh, who cares? Just do it this once. No, because it's these decisions that create your life.
Now, Louis, you've been doing this for a while, and I just wanted to ask you, like, you know, again, I'm sure you've seen, you know, people start, people stop. what would be your biggest piece of advice, like almost like a phrase even, for people to just sort of stay in the moment and not quit? Because I feel like it sometimes comes down to you really needing to just have a moment with yourself and be, and almost in a way, like not be harsh on yourself, but get real and be a bit tough and be like, you know what, I'm not quitting.
Yeah. You know, I think you just have to tell yourself you're worth it, you know, and if, or maybe find a role model, find a friend or someone that achieved success and tell yourself, you know, if they can do this, I can do this. Or, you know, have someone that you're doing it for, maybe like a child or your younger brother or your cousin or, you know, someone that, you know, you want to be there for in a few years, and you want to show them, you want to be an inspiration for them as well. So maybe make it bigger than yourself, you know, like look to be an example for someone else, or find someone else that achieved it and try and measure up to what they did.
Okay, fantastic. Lewis, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
My pleasure, Kelly. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's personal trainer Lewis Caraggio. Again, for more information about all that he's got going on, and he's got a lot going on, go to his website, www.bodyarch.com.
Bring on the remix.
Keegan Radio Edit on the Kelly Alexander Show. Well, as always, a very heartfelt thank you to my guests, Sharon Hyland, Dr. Frank Farley, as well as Lewis Caraggio. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time from Christopher Paolini. Let go of your worries and focus only on the task at hand. The future will be what it will, and fretting about it will only make your fears more likely to come true.
Now, don't forget, next week on the show, we're very excited to welcome social media expert Eric Alper to the show. He's got some really great ideas and tips about how to brand yourself or your company online using social media. It's really cool. Very excited to welcome Eric to the show. As well, we're very excited to welcome singer-songwriter Dylan Murray to the show. He is actually on tour right now with Nelly Furtado, opening up for her, and they actually have a song together called Be Okay. So Dylan's going to talk all about that when he joins us on the show. Now, don't forget to find us on social media. We'd love for you to check us out on Twitter, Kay Alexander Show, as well as on our Facebook page, Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, online, www.kellyalexandershow.com. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.